We're sitting in one of Chris's bird hides overlooking some farmland here. In the distance, I can see Norwich Cathedral spire, but of more interest. Much nearer to us, through these one-way glass windows, we can see some wonderful birds of the Norfolk countryside eating their fill and I suppose taking food elsewhere as well.
Yes, Matthew, they're rooks. And the reason I've just brought you in here just for a very short while is we have a resident raven here now. And believe it or not, he's been coming to this hide. I think it's a male. And although the rooks appeared very large, immediately in front of the glass, so we're only sitting 3 feet from adult rooks with their long beaks, their white skin round the base of the beak, but all in total about 75 mil long, that's about 3 inch long. It looks like a spear on the front, and glossy plumage, baggy feathers over the legs. And they were right in front of us just now, pecking away on some grain I've put there. And I've discovered something I've never seen before, because I'm very well aware that the rooks feed up on the grain and take it to the females who are incubating on this. Their favourite food, if we're cultivating the fields, is soil invertebrates, certainly worms, beetles, anything like that. And not really the farmer's friend, because they will eat freshly emerged cereal just as it comes out of the ground. Oh, one's come right back in front of us now. I tend to want to speak quietly because it can't hear us. The hide is sound insulated. And so what's happening is they're filling up with grain, which of course is dry. And the problem is birds can't carry water. That's all bird species. So at this time of the year, they feed on soil invertebrates. Oh, you're lucky. Three now. And you can see the glossy plumage. 4, 5, 6. Right in front of Matthew. This is what I call kissing distance, Matthew.
You wouldn't want to kiss one of those. I mean, those beaks look really vicious, don't they?
They certainly do. And right, so what I've discovered is they will fill up with grain and you'll see this kind of lump appearing. The rook on our extreme left, the sort of throat patch is just beginning to swell up. As I said in a previous podcast, it looks as though it's swallowed a gobstopper and it's eating as much grain as it can, as quickly as it can. And then what I couldn't work out is why they're not flying back to the rookery. And it puzzled me until I watched what was actually happening. And they fly down the field and they go to the area of water at the bottom. And then they drink lots of water and send that back to the female on the nest in as a form of a bolus in their beak. And it's absolutely perfect. And you talk about husbands looking after the wives while they're looking after the children, because the young rooks have just hatched. Now you've got 12 rooks in front of you.
Well, you might be able to hear the pecking going on. Those are the beaks just on the platform outside.
Give you an idea how big they are, Matthew. If you look to the right, that's a jackdaw.
Yes, quite petite compared with the brutish rooks in front of us. So what they do then is they peck this seed, then mix it with water and form a sort of porridge.
Yes, exactly that. Yes, so they're not eating it themselves, they're not digesting it. Remember, the females are incubating. If you leave your eggs and you're on a rook's nest...
And off they go.
And the eggs are really vulnerable, of course, to being predated by magpies, carrion crows, and even when the young rooks have hatched, we now have 3 pairs of buzzards on the farm, and the buzzards create havoc when they fly over the top of the rookery. Just imagine if that was happening in a football match and some strange creature dropped in and took one of the football supporters out of the mat. You can imagine that it would be louder than Norwich City scoring a goal, I should think, and just fly off with it. And that's what happens. That's what the rooks have to endure. So you were spoilt just then. Then if we had a bit more time, which we haven't got, we would just go, there goes one, look. It's flying straight down to the lake. See him go down the field,
yes,
directly over the hedge, and towards the lake.
And that's a new behaviour.
I've not ever seen that before. It might have happened. I, it's not in any of my books. I do lots of reading at night time. And I haven't found any references to that at all, because I am fully aware that this grain is about 12 to 14% moisture. It is very dry indeed. It's been stored over the winter. And so the rooks cannot really feed that. So the only way the female can use that food is to leave the nest. And I did mention they're really vulnerable, particularly this week when this is main egg hatching week for rooks in the first week of May. And you have these tiny little fellas which are in an egg just a few days ago, about the size of a bantam's egg. The eggs are quite small. And look at that. You are unbelievably small. I was hoping we'd have the raven come here, because the size difference between the jackdaw and the rook is one thing, but when you see the size difference between the rook and the raven sitting 3 feet from you, then it's astonishing. Look, just down in the distance, a buzzard almost flying towards us, and that's got a nest in that tree. Can you see it?
Yes, yep. Just planing over the field there. Yeah,
there it is.
Yes, no wing flaps, just purely on the thermal.
Look at that. Yeah. Wow. Right. Well, I'd sit in here all afternoon waiting, and I'd be ravenous at the end of it.
Raven ravenous, yes.
Goes another rook straight down the hedge to the lake. And so I checked this out, and I drove down, used a pair of binoculars so I could actually see the water, and there's the best part of 40 rooks there, all drinking water, but they weren't swallowing it, they were holding their heads up, and you could actually see the little bolus at the bottom sort of moving about at the base of their bill. So something new I've learned after all those years here on Earth. I keep learning new things every week, and that makes me smile.
Muesli for breakfast.
Exactly that.
Well, this is fabulous here, because it's a warm summer's day, but we're in the cool of the woodland here, just as the bluebells in Fox's Grove start to go over. And we're in the trees here, and you've got me to sit down.
Yes, Matthew. I've had an ambition to show you some of the bird species here at the farm for several years, and some of them are really, really difficult. They're about as rare as hen's teeth almost. One of them would be the lesser spot woodpecker, or the barred woodpecker. The other one is a goldcrest. And the third one, which is why we've come to this particular spot of woodland, is a tree creeper. And in front of us, about 10, 15 yards away, is a completely dead sweet chestnut tree with lots of burrs on the trunk. And the first burr, which is about 6 feet above the ground, the big one facing us.
Yes, got it.
And just on the left-hand side of it, about a foot down, you can see a white bird's dropping. Can you see that?
Yes.
Good. Now, 1 foot exactly above it, just to the right, is a smaller burr attached to the large one. And it's just at the base of that is a hole. We can't see it from here because it's just underneath. It's about 3-4 inches across. So it's 1 foot above that white burr dropping. And that is the nest site of a tree creeper. And if you've never seen a tree creeper, they're tiny. The body length is 2 inches, 50 mil, from head to end of body. And the tail and the beak add another couple of inches or so. So talking about 125 mil in total. Tiny little bird. It looks more like a moth than a bird. And it lives and spends its entire life in and around trees. It doesn't really ever go on the ground. And what we're watching for is the parents to come back. So we're not too close to the tree in order to disturb them. And hopefully we'll be lucky. I'll just focus my binoculars in as well, so I'm ready to go.
We've each got a pair of binoculars, and I'm focusing in on where the hole is.
Yeah, okay. Now, it's just a case of sitting and waiting.
Aren't tree creepers the species that go sort of up and down the trunks backwards?
Well, no, they go head upwards always. But what they do is they start at the bottom of a tree, and they're strictly insectivorous. They will take eggs from moths and larvae, insects as well, and they absolutely love aphids at this time of the year as well. So any insect, they've got a long, down-curved beak, so they can prise in amongst the bark that peels off trees like this in front of us, and often they'll nest behind the bark. But in this case, in front of us, they found a tiny hole under this burr, this sort of growth on the outside of the tree, and they're nesting in that. Grey squirrel in the background, skirting round. And so the beautiful birds, a lot of people think they're related to woodpeckers. And we have all three species of British
name. Oh, there you go, Matthew.
There we are. Has it gone in? It's gone in the hole.
I saw it land, yes.
You saw it land. Tiny little moth-like creature. And it's gone in and it's presumably taken some insects in there. Beige on the back, sort of brown and black stripes, completely beautifully camouflaged against the trunk of that tree. It's the same colour. And underneath, I've seen all sorts of different colours on them. In winter months, they can almost be green, the plumage on the breast, because they press themselves hard up against tree trunks. And the algae can rub off. And at this time of the year, they're almost silvery white underneath. Really grumpy little looking birds with long eyebrows. Sort of beetling eyebrows, we call them. But I was explaining that they're not related to woodpeckers at all. Because woodpeckers' feet is perfectly adapted for climbing trees. Two toes facing forwards on a woodpecker. Two toes facing backwards. Whereas with tree creepers, they're normal, just like normal birds, passerine birds' feet, three toes facing forwards and one toe facing backwards. And yet they're so light and flimsy, the birds, weak legs, tiny little razor-sharp claws, almost microscopic, and they go up trees as far as they can get to the top until it's not worth hunting anymore up there. And then they'll fly down and land at the base of another tree, and that's their habit. But you could see that one just landed on the trunk a foot or so beneath the nest hole and then shot up into the nest. Because they're very prone, like all hole nesting.
I think I might have seen him leave.
Yes, yeah. Oh, right. I was talking so much.
No.
It came out and flitted off.
I think that's right.
So that would be about the normal time that the female would come in and feed the brood, and the male is also coming in and feeding as well. So we've got both sexes. Trouble is, they're nearly impossible to tell the difference between the male and the female. They look pretty much identical.
As long as they know.
Yeah, I'm sure they do. And this is a happy nest site. And all hole nesting birds are quite vulnerable. Blue tits and tree creepers that we're watching at the moment just generally bring off one brood a year. Blue tits have 7, 8, 9 youngsters in a nest, tree creepers 3 or 4, and yet tree creepers are sort of maintaining their population, whereas blue tits, the population, and great tits as well, they have about a 90% mortality rate, and with tree creepers, not quite as high as that. But when they come out, the young, the freshly fledged tree creeper, these tiny little mouse-like birds follow mum and dad round. And at night time, when they roost, it's the most extraordinary sight, because my father, in 1953, coronation year, planted a Wellingtonia tree at Case of St Edmund's Church, right in the entrance. And when the bottom branches dropped out of that, they leave little sockets, and the tree trunk keeps growing, and you have these little holes left that you can just about get your index finger in. And if you watch carefully,
at those trees, you will see there's little white marks, the droppings come out of the back, and the tree creepers actually roost in Wellingtonia trees because it's all nice and warm in these tiny little sockets, 3 or 4 inches deep, just perfect for them. But so we've been waiting about 5 minutes. We should have the next bird come along and hopefully bring some tasty morsels for those youngsters in there.
The real treat about this is tree creepers aren't that well known. Oh, there we are. I think I can see something on the trunk.
Right.
They are tiny, aren't they?
They're absolutely tiny.
And they're the same colour as the trunk as well.
That's the trouble. The body's about the same size as a cotton rail, to give you an idea.
But they're not widely known because, of course, they don't appear really on garden bird tables.
No, they don't. Insectivorous and spend... the only time they really become visible is late spring, early summer, this time of the year, in fact, when they're nesting like this, and they're very obliging because they're generally spending a lot of time on the same tree. Hopefully, one will come back and we'll be able to see it. And they do have an incredibly high pitched call, which kind of tails off with a little flourish right at the end, but it's almost past my hearing range now, as I'm entering, sort of getting older is the only way to put it. You tend to lose the top end of your hearing, and it's very, very high pitched sound. So we just stay quiet for a minute, and then hopefully we'll have one come back and entertain us. Matthew. There.
Oh, yes, got it.
Got it.
Tree creeper.
Tree creeper.
There's in the
just
sun.
In the sun. Oh, perfect.
Beautiful little bird.
Look at that, tiny. And it's going up the tree just above the nest box. The nest hole, I should say.
Few birds live up to their names quite as well.
Yeah,
there we are,
that.
Just around the corner.
Yes.
Creeping up the tree trunk.
Exactly that. Tree creeper. Wow. God, we waited 10 minutes for that, and it's worth it. In the sun. Perfect, absolutely perfect.
And I've got to see a tree creeper
there
properly.
Yeah, two more to go, really. Lesser spot woodpecker and the goldcrest.
Oh, I do hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. Don't forget, if you'd like to hear more or the episodes in full, you can head to countrysidepodcast.co.uk. And if you'd like to email Chris directly, you can. Chris@countrysidepodcast.co.uk.